Chapter 8. The Executive at Ease. Fulgrim leaned over the iron rail of the veranda, eyes closed. The sea breeze carried with it the sour smell of the reef flats below and the sound of the kelp harvesters. The coastal enclaves of Chalcodon were, by and large, devoted to aquacultural pursuits. Massive fisheries dominated the eastern skyline, and fleets of ships scoured the oceans, harvesting the thick sargassum beds. The waters of Byzas had been partitioned by the aristocratic families of the patricians as assiduously as the land and air.
"Lord Phoenician!"
Fulgrim turned. "Yes, Patrician Bucephalos." Bucephalos grimaced.
"I invited you here in order to discuss this offer of yours. Not admire the view."
He refused to meet Fulgrim's eyes, clearly uncomfortable with the giant standing on his veranda. Or perhaps he was feeling guilty. Bucephalos topped his list of suspects as the hand behind the recent spate of assassination attempts. Even so, his invitation had not come as a surprise. Fulgrim had expected it sooner or later. The patricians had no choice but to approach him. They couldn't kill him or otherwise dissuade him. Now they would try bargaining. A bribe, perhaps. Fulgrim was curious as to what they would offer him. Indeed, that was one of the reasons he'd accepted the invitation. The other was to take the measure of a potential enemy. A pair of heavily armoured warriors flanked the fat man, their hands resting on the hilts of their swords. More warriors occupied the steps of the veranda and the high walls of the coastal holdfast above. Those to either side of the patrician eyed Fulgrim warily. For his part, the Primarch studied them with only mild interest. While their thick, segmented armour might provide some protection against the archaic carbines common here, he judged that it would part like paper before Fireblade's edge. And his own panoply was proof against anything they might hope to wield against him. If they intended him harm, they would have to bring an army. Still, if they wanted to try, he saw no reason to dissuade them. "What is there to discuss?" he asked, turning his attentions to their master. The patrician's grimace deepened into an impressive frown.
"Surely you jest. Turning over control of our world to the supposed representatives of some semi-mythical empire."
"Imperium," Fulgrim corrected.
"What's the difference?"
Fulgrim smiled. "Scope?" Bucephalos's guards tensed, and the patrician paled slightly. Fulgrim leaned back against the rail of the veranda, which creaked alarmingly beneath his weight. Bucephalos winced at the sound. "I'm given to understand that you have 3 children, Patrician. All sons. Is that right?"
"Yes."
"Have you allowed Apothecary Fabius to test their genetic material yet? I would be most curious to see whether or not they were suitable candidates for joining my legion." Bucephalos's lips thinned. Fulgrim could smell his fear. Not for himself, but for his heirs. The only thing these patricians valued more than their power was the continuation of their lines. Many of the more prominent families would wither and fade if the Legion chose to collect the blood tithe in full.
"He has been here already, yes,"
Bucephalos said, his hands curling into fists, the knuckles turning white.
"He was very discourteous."
Fulgrim laughed. "Yes, Fabius has his ways, and we all must make allowances for them. His burden is a heavy one. As is mine, deciding, as I must, the fate of this world and all those on it." "Then that is why we're here, isn't it?" He gestured airily. "I suppose you're speaking on behalf of a syndicate of some sort. That's usually the way these things go." Bucephalos blinked.
"What?"
"On my world, whenever the executive clans would have some grievance to put forth, they would form a syndicate, elect a spokesman and send him to me. If the spokesman failed to persuade me, they would then endeavour to bribe me. When that failed, the more stubborn claimants would finance an ill-advised assassination attempt. Finally, the survivors would capitulate. Eventually, they learned the wisdom of skipping directly to capitulation. Fulgrim crossed his arms and continued to lean against the veranda. It was a pose he'd perfected on Chemos. The executive at ease, as an artist of his acquaintance had called it.
"We're not the sort of men to be threatened," Bucephalos said.
"And I am not a man to make threats. I deal in fact." Fulgrim held up a finger. "Fact the first. I control the stars. Your fleet is composed of badly maintained antiques, one of which does not function." A second finger joined the first. "Fact the second. I control the sky. Your airships are children's toys compared to my gunships." A third finger. "Fact the third. I can take control of the ground whenever I wish, and there is no force on this world that can stop me." He shrugged. "I could continue if you like." Bucephalos grimaced.
"We have no proof of any of that."
The protest was half-hearted. The patrician was too clever to believe that. But he needed to save face in front of his men, plus whoever else might be listening. Fulgrim suspected that the entire conversation was being recorded, in some fashion too primitive for his armor's sensors to detect. He sighed. He was growing bored. It was time to give things a push. Pike had advised against tipping his hand in such a fashion, but he was coming to the conclusion that anything else was just a waste of time he didn't have.
"Just as I have no proof that you were behind the recent attempt on my life."
Bucephalos twitched. In shock, Fulgrim thought. He straightened. Corinth had been wrong then, at least about this. "You didn't know?" The patrician grunted.
"No, but it doesn't surprise me. Was it poison?" "It usually is. I myself have been poisoned twice this month alone."
"What do you know of Sabazius?" Fulgrim asked on impulse. The name, and its possible meanings, had gnawed at him since the banquet, though it seemed to have little importance to anyone but the dead. He'd meant to ask Chancellor Corinth about it, but hadn't as yet had the opportunity. Bucephalos shrugged.
"Nothing. A myth."
No flicker of recognition or surprise there. If there was any connection, it wasn't here. Bucephalos shook his head.
"You called us a syndicate earlier. We're not so united as that. There are factions within factions, all of us pushing against one another."
He sounded almost apologetic. Fulgrim gestured. "Then if you are not speaking for a group, why ask for this meeting?"
"To hear from your own lips what you intend. What is to become of us if we support this compliance?"
Bucephalos shifted his bulk.
"What will become of our properties, our privileges? Will our rank mean anything in this new world you promise us?"
He hesitated.
"What of our children?"
"Have you spoken to Primary Iterator Pike?" "I assure you, she can answer all of these questions in detail." If Bucephalos wasn't involved, then this truly was a waste of time.
"I was under the impression that you were in charge,"
Bucephalos said. Fulgrim shrugged.
"It seems like we both made the same mistake then."
He looked down at the patrician, who stared at him in obvious confusion. "Make no mistake, I can do all that I have said and more. And if you attempt to disrupt these proceedings, I will burn all that you have built to ashes." Bucephalos licked his lips.
"And if we do not?"
Fulgrim stepped back, his expression cheerful.
"Then we will be friends, patrician. And as your friend, I will do everything in my power to ensure that you are well taken care of.
But you must come to a decision quickly. There is but a month until the compliance ceremonies. One way or another, all things will be settled by then."
"That isn't much time."
"No, but it's all either of us is getting." The Firebird flew high above Chalcodon, leaving the coast behind. Fulgrim sat, running a cloth across the surface of his sword, working scented oils into the gleaming metal. The oils would, in theory, help disguise the odour of blood that had insinuated itself into the metal. An old bit of folk wisdom from Chemos. disappointing, he said finally. Abdomon looked up. Fulgrim had been silent since they'd left Patrician Bucephalos's coastal holdfast. The Lord Commander, recognizing the Primarch's silence for what it was, had decided to leave him to it.
In what way, my lord?
Fulgrim didn't look at him. I'd hoped he was the one. The way he spoke up at the announcement, the invitation, Corinth's warning. It all seemed so perfect.
Too perfect.
There is no such thing.
Then perhaps he is guilty.
Fulgrim glanced at him. I would have known. Whatever his crimes, this wasn't one of them. He held up his sword, inspecting it for any imperfections. Have you read over the Iterator's latest reports? In the past week, Pike's subordinates had run themselves from one end of the planet to the other, collecting data and making themselves seen. Abdomon nodded. He'd done little else while Fulgrim took in the scenery.
The situation is becoming untenable. There are riots occurring weekly in the westernmost enclaves, according to the latest reports. The patricians are losing control of their fiefdoms and demanding the government dispatch troops. In the meantime, they're mustering their own personal armies, ostensibly for defence of their holdings.
Fulgrim snorted. Clever, in a simple sort of way. Numbers?
At the moment, Pandion still has more than enough men. But given the state of the treasury and discontent in the ranks, probably not for long.
Are they still loyal? Abdomon shrugged. He'd spent several days touring the barracks with Fraser and his officers. What he'd seen hadn't impressed him, and Fraser had waxed eloquent on the shortcomings of the gubernatorial army.
Well, as loyal as anyone can be under those circumstances. It's the officers I'm worried about. The number of career officers has shrunk drastically in the past decade. The ones who are left are in senior command positions, thankfully. But the majority of junior officers are men who bought their commissions and are loyal to their families first and Pandion second. They'll need to be watched.
I assume Pike is already doing just that. Fulgrim planted Fireblade point first between his feet and leaned his shoulder against the hilt. How are Fabius's investigations coming? I have not spoken to him since the incident in the city.
He's retreated to the centre of his web.
Fabius hadn't left his field apothecarium since the attempt on Fulgrim's life. Abdomon had visited him only once, and that had been more than enough. Fulgrim looked at Abdomon sternly. That is unworthy of you, Lord Commander.
Unworthy, but true.
Abdomon frowned.
He has taken over 12,000 genetic samples from all strata of society. No word on what he's found, if anything. The nobility is complaining regularly.
He'd seen the pile of missives himself.
Pike's pet killers have put paid to at least 3 attempts to kill him.
Only 3? Fulgrim waved aside Abdomon's response. I know, it's not funny. Is Fabius aware of these attempts?
He's asked that the bodies be turned over to him.
Fulgrim pinched the bridge of his nose. A startlingly human gesture, Abdomon thought.
And what was Lady Pike's response to that rather ghoulish request?
The bodies were in no condition to be turned over to anyone.
Pike had chuckled as she'd said it. She was more cold-blooded than she appeared. Abdomon put it down to that old European ruthlessness, an instinctual assumption of superiority that the ancient aristocratic lines in particular seemed possessed of. Fulgrim smiled. The primary iterator is a singularly impressive woman. Abdomon laughed.
Intimidating, I'd have said.
We are the Emperor's children, Abdomon. We can't be intimidated. Fulgrim looked up at the mosaics decorating the internal facings. His expression softened, and Abdomon followed his gaze.
The Antarctic clearance, he said.
Mostly, he remembered the white. Everything had been white, even his armour, and cold. He remembered the sound of the wind and the whine of bolter rounds streaking into the emptiness. A difficult campaign? Fulgrim asked, his tone almost wistful. Abdomon hesitated, uncertain as to how to answer the question.
Not as such. Long. Grueling at times. The cold played havoc with our senses.
I wish... Fulgrim fell silent. Abdomon waited, but the Primarch said nothing else. He studied the Phoenician surreptitiously, wondering if he should speak up. It wasn't the first time he'd heard Fulgrim speak longingly of missed opportunities. It was as if he blamed himself for not being there, for not leading his sons to war, as if his presence might have prevented the casualties they took, or the disaster that had befallen them. Abdomon was forced to admit that there might be something to that. Fulgrim's absence had been keenly felt, though none of them had truly understood what it meant. But he was here now, and the past was the past. What? Fulgrim asked. Abdomon blinked, suddenly aware that he'd spoken out loud. He felt a moment of consternation, but pushed it aside. He cleared his throat.
I said the past is the past. Only the future matters in the end.
Fulgrim smiled sadly. Perhaps. But the past is the foundation for all that comes after. And its effects linger, whether we see them or not.
It didn't go well, then,
Pike said, as Fulgrim sat down on a bench across from her. The gardens were quiet this time of day. The usual gaggle of courtiers that infested the palace grounds had better things to do than wander among the sylvan glades, which suited Pike just fine. She enjoyed having the gardens to herself. How did you know?
Your expression. I take it Bucephalus wasn't your man, after all.
No. Fulgrim frowned. But I wouldn't put it past him to try something in the future. He smiled thinly. I suppose it depends on how badly I frightened him. Pike refrained from commenting. She'd warned him against meeting with the patrician, not out of any fear for his safety, but rather out of fear of what might come out of his mouth. Fulgrim had a way with words, but he was impulsive. One wrong word, one idle threat, and everything they'd begun to build might be endangered. She decided to change the subject.
Your suspicions were correct, by the way. Someone is attempting to destabilize the Agri-Circle. Food tithes have been cut by a quarter.
Fulgrim nodded. A lack of food coming in will affect the stability of Novobasilos and the wider continental government. That in turn will put pressure on Pandion and through him the patricians. The cracks will widen, rupturing into open revolt. The coastal enclaves are already considering it, if Bucephalos is any indication.
And there's no way to stop it.
No, not without instituting martial law. And I'm not sure I want to. Fulgrim leaned forward on his bench. Only by seeing the cracks can I attempt to fix them. But that means allowing the destabilization efforts to continue. I must know the source. He knocked on the map, spread across the table between them. There is a single hand throwing these levers. Pike sat up, alert now.
You're certain?
Fulgrim nodded. I've seen it before. Secret societies were rife on Chemos in my youth. Periods of unrest often see the formation of ad hoc brotherhoods, looking for some sense of control amid the confusion. Or to take advantage of it.
And it's not Bucephalos?
She had thought as much earlier, before Corinth had convinced Fulgrim otherwise. Bucephalos wasn't the type to overthrow a government, not with force of arms, at any rate.
No, Fulgrim said.
He stared at the map as if trying to isolate the situation into its component parts. Pike wondered at the expression on his face, simultaneously frustrated and excited. He was enjoying it, like a child who'd learned a new game. A shiver ran through her. A child's enthusiasm slaved to a cogitator-like mind, ruthless, efficient, perfect in its clarity of purpose. Fulgrim attacked the problem from every angle until a weak point revealed itself. Then his attentions focused with deadly precision, like a duelist exploiting a flaw in his opponent's guard.
Representatives of the patricians have visited me over the past few days, looking for some advantage,
Pike said. She poured herself a glass of wine, and then one for Fulgrim.
Mostly trying to secure themselves an advantageous position in the new order. They appear to think that Pandion is living on borrowed time.
He might well be, Fulgrim admitted.
Some of them even threaten me.
She smiled at the look on his face.
Obliquely, of course. Nothing so forward as a sniper's bullet. They're used to getting their way in these matters. They had little understanding of the wider implications of our presence. Or they might simply be that arrogant.
Or both. She nodded in agreement.
They'll need to be dealt with. Harshly is my preference.
He looked at her, eyebrow raised. She shrugged.
They insulted me. I can have my people kill them, if you'd prefer.
Fulgrim laughed. It may come to that. Though I'd like to leave some of them alive. A functioning aristocracy is necessary, at least at the outset.
A careful dance, then, she said.
I'm a fine dancer, Fulgrim said. Acclaimed for my grace and agility. He preened slightly, and she couldn't help but laugh.
I never had the knack for it myself. Perhaps you can teach me.
I would be delighted. Fulgrim glanced at the map again. I'll send Kasparos and Grithan to inspect the Agri-Circle, I think. The landowners there require a gentler touch than those in the mountains.
I had another request,
Pike said. Fulgrim glanced at her. Pike paused, considering her next words carefully.
I ask that you consider being more careful in the future.
Careful?
No more running after snipers? No more baiting assassins?
Fulgrim drew himself up. I will not hide, Lady Golconda.
I'm not asking you to. But twice now you've acted on instinct, pursuing your attackers rather than waiting for support. You're aggressive and impulsive when provoked. That is invaluable intelligence for a certain sort of person.
Fulgrim's expression didn't change, but Pike could feel the sudden tension radiating from him. She forced herself to remain calm. She had endured the anger of one of the Emperor's sons before, and she could do so again.
And what sort of person is that?
The words came out like the warning rumble of some great cat, somewhere between a purr of invitation and a growl of reproach.
Have our enemies revealed themselves to you, primary iterator?
He sat back, fingers interlaced.
Are their schemes suddenly laid bare before your keen insight?
His tone was mild, but the words were cutting, almost petulant. She took a steadying breath, knowing that to say the wrong thing now was to lose him entirely.
That is not what I meant, and you know it, Lord Fulgrim,
she said, her voice even.
This latest attempt may very well have been a feint, to better gauge your capabilities.
Or it may have merely been the act of desperate men, Fulgrim said. The explosion wasn't necessarily meant for me. It would have covered their escape and eradicated any evidence they might have left behind. He sighed and leaned back. But he hesitated. For a moment his two handsome features cracked, and Pike glimpsed what lay beneath. Then he was smiling again, his mask artfully rearranged. But, he continued, you may very well be right, my lady. Forgive me. She nodded slowly. The Primarchs were not human, she reminded herself. They were both more and less than that. But like humans, they had their foibles. Fulgrim was arrogant, but it was an assumed arrogance. It was a mask he wore, a part he played. Soon enough, it might become the real thing. For now, it was simply another piece of armour, a way to protect himself from a galaxy all too quick to take advantage of his flaws. She knew his story. She knew all of their stories. A boyhood spent in hardship, forced to endure terrible privation and dangers that would have broken the sanity of a normal man. A slow, determined climb to conquest. It left little time for friendship, or for learning those lessons that made one a part of society. She smiled.
My late husband, one of them, I forget which, had a saying, "Forgiveness is unnecessary between friends."
Fulgrim chuckled. "And are we friends, then?"
"If you like."
She took a chance and patted his knee. Fulgrim laid his hand over hers.
"A wise man, your husband," Fulgrim sat back.
"I was betrothed once," he continued idly. "Several times, actually. Political marriages, of course, made to seal binding agreements or open negotiations with certain executive dynasties." Pike didn't reply. His tone had become sombre, a rare thing for Fulgrim. The Phoenician seemed to always be smiling, laughing at some joke only he understood. But now he seemed tired. He rubbed his face.
"I outlived them all, one way or another."
"Did you love them?"
Fulgrim smiled slowly. "Some, I think. But first, after a time, I stopped. Love was a weakness I could ill afford in those days. A billion lives rested on my shoulders, and any hesitation on my part would have doomed them all irrevocably." He laughed softly. "Or so I told myself then."
"And now?"
"Now, I know it would have. There is no room for weakness in this galaxy. No room for imperfection." He set the cup aside and grimaced. "Poisoned again?"
"Yes, you'd think they'd learn."
Pike held up the decanter. She was surprised that he'd noticed. This particular toxin was fairly subtle. The people of Byzas had a way with poisons. Her servants would root out this poisoner, as they had the others, and deal with them quietly and professionally.
"That was a good vintage as well. Shame."
"That word encompasses this entire situation. Have I made a mistake?" Pike hesitated. Fulgrim's dark eyes bored into her. She cleared her throat.
"I don't think so. A military response would have done more harm than good. This world has suffered enough. You've read the planetary survey reports. It isn't just society that's breaking down, but Byzas itself. It's on the cusp of multiple disasters. Runaway climate change, tectonic instability, even mass extinctions of native life."
She looked at him.
"Of all your brothers, you are the only one who had to save a world as well as its people. You were more than a warlord or a tyrant. You were a saviour. You raised your people up and salvaged a half-dead world, making it over into something bearable, if not a paradise. And you will do so again. You are the firebringer, and you will burn away the old so that the new might prosper."
She rose.
"Now enough of this. What say we go find a new bottle of wine, and you teach me to dance?"
Fulgrim smiled and rose to his feet. "Do you think you can keep up with me?"
"I have so far."